Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Jeffrey Clark. Clark is one of the producers of the Jed I. Rosenberg-directed documentary, Louder Than You Think, A Lo-Fi History of Gary Young and Pavement. Young, who passed in 2023 at the age of 70, was dismissed from Pavement in 1993, amid concerns over his erratic performances and substance use. He later recorded with Gary Young's Hospital and released a solo album in 2016. Jeffrey Clark spoke with me about the making of the film, its themes, and the accompanying soundtrack, and what it was like to know Gary Young. That's Jeffrey Clark talking Gary Young on Into Music, coming up now. So I guess I just kind of wanted to start with an observation. So I think I saw the film the first time maybe last spring. I think it was when Pavements was about to come out.
Right.
And I was aware of it, and I said, well, I want to see that. And then I just rewatched it last week in anticipation of talking to you. The one thing I guess an observation that comes out of it is that it's this kind of reminder of like how complex we are as people, and how complex relationships are. Gary was this person who maybe was a little bit self-destructive, but he had this very beautiful side to him, and so on and so forth. That's not easy to necessarily capture. How did that happen?
Right. No, it's true. You know, I know Gary going back to that era that I'm talking about. I knew Gary. I met Gary like probably in 1979 or something like that. And at that point, you know, there was a little kind of punk scene going on in Stockton that I knew a lot of those figures in, and that's how I got to know Gary. Although he wasn't really playing music at the time, but from the very beginning, you could see that Gary was just this interesting kind of guy. Honestly, the reason that I wanted to make the film, that was kind of this idea bubbling in my mind for many years, actually, was just because of the thing you said. Like, he was sort of self-contradictory in a lot of ways. He could be the most lovely guy. He's very generous and funny and smart. And then he could also just be like a nightmare to be around and hard to be, you know, like wow, I need some space here. So not just, you know, how that affected me personally, but just, I mean, that kind of clearly was a factor in the weirdness of him being in the band with Pavement, that worked out. And I knew Steve Malkmus and Scott Kamberg slightly before that band got going. I had met them before, and I knew Steve Malkmus was when he was like a kid, like 15, 16, he was in a band called the Straw Dogs in Stockton that I'd seen play. You know, they'd be opening for Black Flag or something like it, or just local punk bands. But it just caught me so off guard that was this marriage that had happened. And it just seems so unlikely that there's got to be a film. There's a story there. And as we made the film, I mean, one thing about Gary was that he was a natural performer. So all these different facets of his personality, they came out during the making of the film. I don't know. Spoiler alert, but there's, you know, he's he's a complex guy, like you said, and there's some highs and lows. So in a way, we just put the camera on. We sort of captured that. You know, he was who he was, and all we had to do was kind of be there for that. And I think the telling of the story, what was kind of fascinating for me was, like, I knew that it was an odd, you know, marriage of these elements of this 40-year-old guy and these 20-year-old kids, and suddenly it blows up into this worldwide thing. Because Gary was, like, and I guess basically the original idea was like, wow, I would have never guessed that Gary would find himself caught up in this world. He was just a guy who, interesting character in Stockton, and played in local bands. And I never thought of him as like the best drummer in Stockton or the second best drummer in Stockton or any of that kind of stuff. Just kind of this guy that I knew that was a friend and very interesting. But as we made the film and were editing the film, even the revelation to some degree for me was like, but Gary kind of ignited them in a way, or he was an embodiment of this idea that they had about chaotic approach to music, lo-fi, all these things that they were kind of intellectualizing. It'd be cool to be like these some of the bands that they admired around them, Sonic Youth or the bands in New Zealand that I know Malcolmus was into, that kind of stuff. But Gary was that. Like Gary was just a naturally lo-fi kind of person. So just putting that, finishing the thought, I guess it was a great kind of blossoming of the whole concept of the film that came to me while we were doing it. Was like, this never would have happened without Gary, in my opinion. Like he, you know, they're talented, they have their own thing. They would have succeeded probably at some level, Steve and Scott, and you know, and Mark Ibold, you know, got brought into the fold, and he's very talented, all that stuff. But Gary kind of he's kind of the, well, you know, the term that I think Bob Nastanovich uses is he's the icing on the cake in that way. But I don't even know if the cake would have got baked if Gary hadn't been an element at the very beginning. Like it's for Pavement anyway, you know. I don't think there would have been a Pavement. They wouldn't have been the band that they turned out to be without him there at the beginning.
It is just so fascinating to me, right? That chemistry that happens, you know, just kind of one example. So over the summer, you know, I watched that Ozzy Osbourne Farewell, and it was the, you know, the last performance of the original Black Sabbath. And just whether one is a fan of Black Sabbath or not, there's an undeniable
Oh, yeah.
chemistry between those four people. And you just think like, what forces, you know, brought them together? And that's kind of how I feel about Gary. It's like that randomness of chemistry and how people
Yes.
meet.
And the thing about that, Jed, I would add, it would be that, like, to go into the film, what we didn't, we weren't, I mean, it's a music documentary and it's about an interesting band that did good work and, you know, they're pretty well known and all that stuff, very successful in their own way. But really, the idea for the film wasn't so much about a music documentary, but it's just like what you said. It's just like a story about human chemistry. Like, can you imagine something this weird happening? Well, it really did happen. And it could have been about a number of things, you know. Hopefully that comes across in the film. It's sort of like I said, you know, you don't have to really know or care much about indie rock or lo-fi or Pavement or anything, hopefully, to get something out of this film and be moved by it. Because it's really a story about what you just said, human interaction. Odd things happen when this person meets that person.
I was struck by, and I'm assuming that some of that is probably down to time passing, but how much affection, for instance, Scott and Steven really had for Gary. I mean, it was obvious watching that they were like, you know, all of this happened, but at the end of the day, this is somebody we care about.
Well, Gary, he was charming and funny, and he another thing about it is, you know, he brought a perspective about music to them as well. Particularly Bob and Scott, you know, those guys, like they spent a lot of time with him on the road and maintained friendships. And I know Malcolmus felt the same. He was so generous with his time to talk about Gary and express how much fun that it was to have him in the band. But that said, you know, I know, I think Steve in particular, I think, you know, he may have felt the brunt a little bit more of Gary's dark side more than some of the others. You know, they were very young, and I feel like maybe Steve Malkmus is, I mean, he said as much, like there's a little bit of a PTSD to some degree about that experience too, because it was a roller coaster ride. It always was a roller coaster ride with Gary. It was a roller coaster ride making the film with Gary. And I could totally kind of get that. It was funny when we were making the film, we're going, this is backing up 1 second here. So my co-producer, Brian Thalkin, he'd been in a band with Gary in the late 70s when Gary first came to Stockton, called The Fall of Christianity. And so all his stories about Gary, what it's like to be in a band with Gary, trying to be, play shows, go out on the road, handstands, handing out stuff, all that stuff, that's all the vodka and everything else, all the other substance during and after, that was all still there when in 1979. It's the same thing, except Brian was only 10 years younger than Gary rather than 20 years younger like Steve and Scott. So he, you know, was amused to some degree, like they're just living out the same thing that we did, except we fired him eventually, or it fell apart a lot sooner. And while we were making the film, we kind of felt like, man, we're getting sucked into this thing. Like, we don't know where this is going to go. It could all fall apart at any time. It's like there was a certain kind of stress in the making of the film that I felt was similar to what it must have been like to be in a band with the guy, the good and the bad. And it was a lot of positive, fun, amazing stuff. But yeah, so it is a roller coaster in that way.
Did you experience moments with him where he just maybe, I don't know, said, "Yeah, don't come back. I think I'm done with this. I don't want you to."
Never. No, absolutely not. In fact, when we first got there, the very first day of shooting, which you kind of see at the beginning of the film, it's pretty much that scene when Jed Rosenberg, our director, and Brian and I showed up, and Gary's wife, Jerry, had she was at work. She just said, "Well, you guys let yourself in. Gary's there." She was hesitant about it because Jerry's a very private person, and if she was very gracious to let us even do this. But when we came in, Gary was laid out on that sofa, like you see at the beginning of the film. And he was in no condition to do anything, I thought. I was like, and I said to Brian, I said, man, I don't know if this is going to even, well, maybe it's a bad idea. Like, I was the one who was like, I was concerned he might even like die while we're there, you know? But honestly, I hadn't seen Gary in 10 years when we started to make the film. The previous time I'd seen him was at the Pavement reunion shows in 2010. They did a couple of shows. He played with them on stage at the end of their show in Stockton and also in Berkeley. But, no, I had my doubts. But the thing was with Gary being who he was, he basically convinced Brian and I that we needed to take him to the market down in the road and get some vodka. And you see him hitting off this bottle of Orange Crush or something like that that he's got. It's half vodka, half soda. And once he hit on that, he had a little bit of that. He perked right up and you turn the cameras on and he's ready to go. And he was highly energized at that point and throughout. Then he would kind of run out of steam by mid-afternoon or something like that. But like if you got him between 10, 11 o'clock and 2, something like that, he was on and he would have never turned to wait. If it, he would never say turn the camera off. He's warts and all guy, and he knew what we were doing, and he knew what he was doing, and yeah, no, he was completely the ready to be the star at any moment, good or bad.
There's something too, when I was watching the film, I was sort of reminded of like Bob Stinson in The Replacements, right? Because I think they had a similar role in that Bob Stinson was the attraction, you know, is he going to turn up in a tutu or wrestling outfit? But then at some point, I think maybe people like that at a certain point they get maybe tired of being the clown, so to speak, or the show, and they don't want it anymore, but they don't know how to stop.
Interesting, right? Sure. I mean, I think that's always going to be a factor in bands that perform live and all that. And some people are just they're natural put the light on me people. I don't think I can't say that I ever heard Gary say he regretted anything about anything that happened. In fact, I mean, there's a scene in the movie where he's talking about he does a little speech about if there's any kids out there watching, don't do what I did. And then Jed Rosenberg says, Well, do you regret that? He goes, oh, are you sorry? He says, are you sorry for that? He goes, I'm not sorry. I'm not saying I'm sorry. I'm saying somebody else is going to be sorry. So no, I think I don't think Gary ever had that moment where like he was like, well, maybe I better tone this down, or let's put the vegetables aside for a while, or not, no more handstands this week or something. He's just always kind of pushing that envelope. And it's just, if you could ride with it, then you're good. And if, I don't know, like I think that's probably part of the tension that you feel in the movie is, I think Bob says, you know, Gary had this idea that a band, to be great, there had to be this tension inside of the entity. And but he says, but he was the only one that thought that. Like, so yeah.
Yeah, such a difference of personalities that eventually emerges, and I think that's a lot of times, right, why bands break up or people leave bands anyway. It doesn't have to be so
Absolutely.
extreme.
Any kind of relationship like that. But you know, or it's just kind of the classic thing of like the thing that makes you that your strength could also flip and then be what tears you to bits. You know, like it's just the fact that Gary brought this lo-fi sensibility to them, that he was the embodiment of this funky, weird sound, weird presentation, his drumming style, all these things, and the performances that he did in front of the gigs, during the gigs, his need for to get out in front, all that stuff, that helped propel them to who they were at the beginning and got a lot of the notoriety. And at the same time, it was like at some point it would become unsustainable, you know, I think. One of the questions that we asked Steve and Scott that we realized we don't have a good answer for this, we had to go back and say, why, how did it last that long? Like, why? Because, like I said, with the previous band that Gary was in with Brian Falcon, The Fall of Christianity, you know, went on for about a year. And then they're like, man, this can't work. And, but Steve and Scott kind of hung in there with him, and he hung in there with them, you know, at that point for quite a while. Like, they had that initial burst to the top, really. Gary got to play all around the world. And, so I think that's the surprising thing. Like, how did they hang in there on that?
I love the moment where he has the customs form, you know,
Oh,
and
yeah.
it's like, have you ever, used illicit drugs?
Have you ever been convicted of a, yeah, all these things, you know? Yeah, I know. He's quite amused by that. And it was funny. It's a great, that is a great little moment there. But see, so the flip side of that would be, as Bob talks about in the movie, Bob Mastanovich says, you know, I was responsible for this guy. Like, I turned out to be the one who, like, I got to get him through customs. And I was like 25 years old at the time. And I'm like, you know, so I was always worried about him. And is this a good idea? None of the other guys really expressed too much sort of trauma around it. And Steve doesn't do that in the film. I'm just saying something that he told me personally about it. And other people have said, you know, that. He loves the work. It was fun. He was young. It was all great. But like looking back on it, it's like, whoa, that was hard.
Whether it's a parent or a sibling or just a friend, if you know somebody who has extreme substance abuse problems, it just takes its toll. It's inevitable.
Yes, right. With or without the success that they were getting, that was Gary's, you know, kind of path. And his brother talks about it a little bit in the film, you know, like from an early age, you know, he was kind of this super high energy guy who he felt like he's always trying to like slow things down internally for himself. He said it's hard to be himself, you know, probably in that body with that much energy and that, you know, whatever was going on there with that. So yeah, it's a blessing, and then it turns out to also be a problem for the people that are working with him. I don't know. I mean, I don't have a good perspective on the film anymore because I, you know, we made it, and I've watched it so many times. Certain things emerge, but I do kind of feel like by somebody else watching it, maybe there'll be some revelations about what that's like, you know, for them in their own life or somebody around them. You've seen this. It's not a music context, but like everybody knows Well, maybe I don't know somebody quite like Gary, but everybody's had to deal with situations like that. Like, what is my relationship with this person, and how do I sustain it, or what are the boundaries? This kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And we certainly had that making the film. You know, what are our boundaries here? You know, like and part of it was just like, are we enabling Gary here? You know, to some degree. So hopefully we showed all the sides, you know, or enough sides, or you get a full picture, full spectrum picture. We don't pull any punches about where Gary struggled with things, and you certainly see him being the amazing person that he often could be. And you could see why, like, somebody like that could make an impact on an audience and do what he did. So yeah, it's the old double-edged sword, I guess.
I felt like he's a guy I would like to have as a neighbor because I bet he would be a hell of a lot of fun to talk to
Yes.
and,
Yeah.
you know, and interact with. And like I said, all the, you know, earlier, but with all those complexities, you know.
You got to take all of it together in that context. Then you got to figure out what's my relationship to that going to be? So, you know, yeah, Gary was immensely fun and amusing, and you could learn a lot from him. He had a great record collection, all that kind of stuff. And then, yeah, at times it's just like, yeah, I think I got to go take a break here. But being in the band, you know, they didn't really have that luxury. They're in a bus with the guy, you know, traveling through, you know, Antwerp and Paris and whatever their tour dates were and all that stuff.
Well, before I kind of turn toward the soundtrack, you know, I asked you if Gary ever had a day where he said, you know, let's stop. But were there days for you where you just felt like, this is a lot for me?
Oh, yes. Absolutely, you know, but my advantage was I'd never made a film before. And to be honest, I mean, when Brian and I started talking about this initially, plus David Nicholson, our DP, he and I were kicking this idea around about making a doc about Gary years before. Initially, I just thought it was going to be a short film, like a 15-minute film. And I thought, well, we could do that. That'd be fun. You know, you've got to meet this guy, Gary. You know the band Pavement? Gary was, I would explain this thing, go, oh, that sounds good. So we attempted to make this film. That's some of the footage you see, like that one you were just talking about, where he's holding up his customs form and all that stuff. But as we went along, I realized, like, this is, you can't just make a 15-minute film about this. This is like too, and I just got pulled into it more and more. So as I experienced those feelings that you just mentioned, like, wow, this is kind of overwhelming. It's kind of a point where it's like I was already in this deep, and I didn't know how hard it is to make a film. So that was an advantage for me. I was like, well, we'll get through it. You know, I guess, you know, there were moments when certainly I felt like, well, this is way harder than I thought, but it's too late at that point. So we just kept pushed on.
Well, so what I love about the soundtrack is that it to me it can function separate from the film. Like I can just listen to it. But if one has seen the film, I think there's a lot of Gary's personality that also comes out through what's on the soundtrack.
You know, he plays on a lot of the tracks, obviously. And then we did insert some dialogue a la Blade Runner, was kind of the almost like a parody of Blade Runner to some degree, you know, but putting Gary and some of the other dialogue in the background of some of the other film music that was specifically part, you know, just sort of the background music. So yeah, Gary's all over there. You know, you do, I hopefully you do get a sense of him and why we did this, you know, just from listening to the album. But I'm actually really interested in what you just said about you could not, you know, not even know about this film. And maybe you're a Pavement fan, you see there's three songs of Pavement playing live and an early date with Gary and go, okay, well, that sounds cool. And then maybe you get pulled in with some of the other tracks, which are the early bands around that scene in Stockton in the late 70s, early 80s punk scene. And then we have, like I just mentioned, some of the incidental music composed specifically for the film, which is more electronic based. So I think it kind of holds together as an album. Hopefully it does. I'm glad you kind of alluded to that.
Yeah. I think that's sometimes kind of hard to, you know, separate, you know, for obvious reasons, and sometimes they don't work as standalones, but this is very much a case where it does. And of course, we get Plant Man, which I can now have in my collections, not just in the film.
Oh, okay.
and what an amazing piece of music that is. I mean, really, I was just like, this is incredible.
It's very Gary, you know, like that's straight out of his mind. Unfortunately, you can't see the video with it, you know, which that was on MTV at the time, because that's pretty amazing as well, with Thurston Moore dressed up as a tree in the background and stuff like that. But yeah, it's quite a, a remnant of some part of Gary's mind. You know, he did love plants. He was a gardener, and you know, he grew a lot of weed in the backyard. He had a green thumb in that way for sure. But yeah, it's I don't even know what to say about that song. I guess it's a song. It's a chant. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Between that and then there's the song about the refrigerator light or the
Oh yes, right. Now that yeah, the refrigerator light, it's like a poem almost, really. And that kind of came in late. We had a lot of help from a guy called Eric Westfall, who sadly passed away in the past year and a half or so. Eric was a great friend of Gary's and a collaborator with him in hospital. And was a guy just kind of on the scene in Stockton. And I knew Eric, you know, from our interactions, not just with the film, but going way back in our early days as musicians in Stockton. Eric was really helpful in getting together some of this material. When I asked him if there's any, you know, like what kind of stuff might he have in the archives there, he'd recorded this piece. And he sent it over to me. I'm like, oh my God. We were like 80% done editing the film at that point. And I just said, man, we got to have that in the movie. It's so beautiful and touching and tender and revealing and naked. So yeah, that's I wanted to include that on the soundtrack as well, because it's one of my favorite moments in the film for sure. It's kind of just Gary talking about what it's like to be Gary at age, you know, I don't know when he did that. He's probably only in his 50s when he recorded that, but you know, a lot of ways Gary would be like 50 going on 75 at that point. Yeah, that's a beautiful one to notice that. And then we overlaid that a little bit with some of Noah Georgeson's soundtrack music. It's pretty poignant. Yeah.
Well, and it speaks to that, and then that moment in the film where he has the Yes album cover, right? He's got the Roger Dean design. He's holding it up like the cloud and saying, yes. It's that childlike quality to him that really, in both those instances,
it's real genuine enthusiasm, right? For that, for the things that inspired him. He does that, you know, Yes. Yes was a huge influence on him, as he mentions a couple of times. I think he says that's his favorite band. Bill Bruford was his rock drummer god and icon, or one of them anyway. Carmen Appice was another one I know. But so, you know, that whole 60s generation and 70s, that Prague was a huge thing for Gary. And he did have a kind of like a kid's connection with it, you know, emotionally, for sure. He never got over his enthusiasm for that stuff. And that's in the liner notes for the album. I had my friend Kelly Foley, who was in bands with Gary and hung out there a lot, worked in the studio a lot. I had him write a kind of a little sort of just an expressive, what's it like to be sitting there in Gary's living room in, you know, in 1982 or whatever. What would that be like? So you get that with these liner notes, and Kelly very much, you know, is able to evoke that childlike wonder or fun and inviting thing and being really enthusiastic. Oh man, you got to hear, you know, the album that Antenna Jimmy Siemens made from, you know, after Captain Beefheart made the solo record or whatever, like stuff that only Gary knew that he'd be real. We got to hear this. Now listen to this one part, you know, like you got to just not pay attention, you know, like that part of it. And yeah, you get that that's his mother. He's talking to about the Roger Dean gatefold for, I forget what album that is, but you know, the Yes album that he's super excited about, and tell his mom about it and how it looks like the clouds back there. Like, see, look, this is super Gary. Yeah.
So he saw the film.
Yeah. Gary saw the film kind of, a little bit on the while we were making. Not we didn't really show too much while we were getting there, but when we premiered it at South by Southwest, Gary came. We got Gary out there, and that's almost a whole other story in a way. Like it's a movie almost in and of itself, a little short film about Gary Young in Austin watching himself on screen, because he had all those things I've just we that we've been talking about here. They were all there in that weekend. They were all there for those days. His that enthusiasm we're talking about. He was loving the spotlight. He was handing out. What did he get? He went and he bought a bunch of bananas, and he was handing them out in front of the when we at the screening. He's here, take a. And by that time, Gary was not in great health. He was in a wheelchair for part of it, but he was loving that, and he was he was shouting out stuff during the screening. Jed Rosenberg said he was sitting next to Gary, and Gary apparently said, "Is it okay if I have a few comments here? Like, I have some stuff to say about this." So he was like kind of shouting, heckling his own film in a way. Like somebody would say something on screen, he'd say, "That was bullshit. That's bullshit." Stuff like that. He loved the Q&A. He said weird things to me in the Q&A. He was just, and then after the screenings, in between, we did a couple of screenings, and in between, he was walking around, just being Gary, but getting a lot of attention. People were coming up to him, getting autographs, get one of their picture taken with him. Women were coming up and giving him stuff. He was in seventh heaven. And he said to me many times, several times, especially there in Austin, he said, "I don't know why you did this for me, but thanks." And he's really touching. He got that, like, this was a pretty special thing. I think you always maybe, it's a little presumptuous to say this, but I would say in a way, him being the subject of a film meant as much to him as the fame that he got by being in Pavement. Just the fact that somebody would, he was cognizant that that's not something that happens very often. And he thought it was weird, which it is weird, but seemed like the right thing to do, and he was appreciative that we did it.
You've been listening to a conversation with Jeffrey Clark, co-producer of the film Louder Than You Think, a lo-fi history of Gary Young and Pavement. The film is available via various digital streaming platforms, which you can learn more about at factory25.com. The soundtrack to Louder Than You Think is available via Independent Project Records, which is found online at independentprojectrecords.com. While you're there, you can also learn about Jeffrey Clark's band, Shiva Burlesque. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. And find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. As always, we like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torrin Anderson. Thanks for listening. See you next time.